Today on The Breakdown, Sam Greenwood, Mustafa Kanat, third guy who you've never heard of or seen before, some sort of old dude. It's a three-way. We're doing a three-way on the show, and we are an EPT main event. It's Monte Carlo, the site of many historic tournaments and plays. Who will ever forget all the incredible things that went down? Mohsen Sharania, that time, winning. Who will ever forget it? Anyway, there's going to be surprises. You're not going to believe the things that happened. And what I'll say is this. Mustafa Kanat, he's got more than just a beard working. He's got a bluff working. He's going to try and get one through, get one past these guys. And Mustafa knows you can't. It doesn't just take one barrel to do it. Not in the EPT. Not against Sam Greenwood, an old guy. It's going to take a little bit more than that. Does Mustafa have enough powder in the keg to make it happen? Also, some strange stuff goes on besides that. In this hand on The Breakdown, Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey, first time, no rehearsal. I'm sure in the past you've said to me, it's good to under-promise and over-deliver.
Yeah, absolutely.
So not much of a practicer of what you preach.
Oh, no. Why would you say that?
I mean, you basically said this was like the greatest hand of all time.
I said there were twists and turns.
Yeah, there was more than that. You were hype. You were
a
hype man.
I didn't say the greatest. You just over-promised.
You're basically like a Red Bull girl on a college campus selling Red Bull to people and telling them how it's going to change their lives. Like, that's you.
I mean, it's a job, right? Yeah. Isn't that what all advertising is anyway? Why'd you make it about a Red Bull girl? You are despicable.
Yeah, I am despicable, aren't I? Yeah.
Yeah. I overplayed it slightly, I'll admit. But it's an interesting hand that has some interesting spots in it.
What is it, like 2018? Sam Greenwood and Mustafa Kanat? Who talks about
these? It's not. It's 2022, bro.
Well, that's weird because I thought those guys must have just like decided to quit playing poker in 2018.
Nope,
they're still here. I guess
they're back. Maybe they took some time off with the hurricane. There may have been a hurricane. There are hurricanes.
There is definitely hurricanes. There are fires.
Yeah, the fire. Maybe because of the fire.
One of the fires could have gotten them.
Probably a specific fire, not just one of the rando fires. You know, probably it was a fire. You know,
sure,
like fire in the hole. If you get fire in your hole, it hurts a lot.
Yeah, okay.
I'm so sorry, everyone.
We're off to a really good start.
So sorry.
We're off to a really good start.
We are scraping the bottom. There's nothing left. I'm going to hollowed out husk.
Well, you know, what you can do when you get your hollowed out husk is you can put some water in there and let it sit in there for a while.
Yeah.
And then, like, try to distill that water and get whatever resin comes out of that. And you get, like, the essence of whatever nutrition was in the husk before it was empty.
Really?
And then you use that, you make oatmeal, and you feed a whole village.
The nutrition?
Nutrition from the husk.
From the husk before it was empty? How would that happen? How does that work? Like
if there's like some nutritious material in the husk?
Yeah, you get whatever's left.
Yeah, yeah, you try
the
to...
The dregs? You're like basically trolling the dregs?
Yeah, yeah. You distill it down, and then you reinfuse that into some sort of mass-producible food item, and you know you're good.
That's what I do on the show anyway.
That is what you do on the show. It's a husk reproduction situation.
I was going for trolling the dregs, but yes, that too.
Trolling the dregs is definitely part of what we do.
Yeah.
But that's not what you do in Monte Carlo, man. That's where you freaking buy a Lamborghini and then you're embarrassed that you didn't buy a more expensive car.
Yeah,
it's like I could have had
You can't get a date if you have a Lamborghini.
Like the Bugatti dealership's over there and I didn't go because I'm just a Lamborghini guy. I'm only going to pay $350,000 for a car today.
I mean, it's okay, you know. Some people have to think about, you know, economics.
Right.
You got to, you know, you probably fly coach, too. It's okay.
It is.
Lamborghini guy.
I mean, you do like to talk about this, and you always have your one anecdote about neighbors wanting to make more money than their neighbors versus making more money overall.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, it must be strange in Monte Carlo if you actually live there. You know, like, yeah, I'm just a Lamborghini guy. Like, I'm just Lamborghini rich, you know. I'm not.
I mean, it's.
I don't have a custom-made car that was made by Enzo Ferrari.
I mean, I think that's true in anywhere where there's like a bunch of rich people all living in this, like on the same street, you know, it's keeping up with the Joneses, right? I'm sure that's true as a rich person. period. Yeah. You know, and yeah. You may not know about their finances, but they have the nicer car and it burns you just a little bit. Because you bought the car for status.
Probably a large swath of the ultra rich are like that, but I'm sure there are some that aren't, right? And that would be ideal if you were to achieve ultra richness.
Very few are not like that, right? Have you seen the size of those yachts? They are outrageous.
That's obviously not a good argument. That's just the yachts that you see. You don't see the yachts of people who don't buy the yachts.
That's true.
Yeah.
What else don't I see about the things that people that don't buy?
Do you not take my point?
No, I do. I totally take your point. It's a selection bias.
Yeah, that's right.
Of course, that's true. A confirmation bias, one might even argue. Having said that, I would argue that not all, but most very wealthy people are pretty competitive. That's one of the things that got them to be very wealthy.
Yeah.
And so then it's hard to turn that off. And I don't know if they know how to turn it off or when to turn it off, you know? Like, they may say, like, eventually down the road I'll turn it off, but I only have $100 million, you know? And I've heard, actually, billionaires talk about this, of, like, where they say, 20 million and I'm out because they hate their job so much. And they get to 20 and it becomes 50, and then 50 becomes 100 million, and then 100 becomes 500 million, and then 500 million becomes a billion. And this is really... because it all doesn't feel like enough, you know?
Right, and then every further step you take, you see what you could have and what you're restricted from having if you don't continue.
Right, and you're almost never the biggest cat on the log.
Right.
Right.
It's hard to be the biggest cat on the log.
Right.
A place where cats famously hang out, log.
And even when you are, someone's coming for you. So, like, you know, try and put as much... if you decide to care about these things. But if you don't care about the scoreboard, you probably weren't... It's hard to be very rich in the first place. Not impossible, but it's much harder. Maybe the guy who did Minecraft, I think that guy's rich and wasn't really trying that hard. But everyone else really took a swing at it, you know?
Yeah, for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe like Beeple. Maybe Beeple's all right.
Maybe.
You know?
Maybe. I don't know. Once you start moving in that direction, though, it may be hard unless you really were never trying to get rich at all.
Right.
Maybe people.
I hope that's not true. Just for, like, you know, the American dream little piece of me that's like, if I were to become ultra rich, I wouldn't be like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I worry about myself just having seen, you know, in very small, non-comparable situations of, like, getting some level of money and, like, thinking, like, before thinking that would be enough, and then when you actually get there thinking, like, oh, that's not enough. You got to have more than that. Like, here's all the reasons why. And not that there's nothing to that, but... I already saw myself doing that, and I was like, oh, am I on the train here or what?
I mean, unsurprisingly, we're not talking about numbers that would be like life-ending wealth.
We're not talking about $100 million
here. Right, yeah. So I think there is a point where it's different, right, where it's like, obviously, you could live on this, and your family, and you have generational wealth if you stop right now.
Right.
And just put it in an index fund and don't ever look at it, and it's fine.
Right.
Like, you'll it's totally done. You're done.
Right.
You know, that's different than you're like, well, this is a lot of money from what I thought when I was 20, but also it's not quite as much as I need to do the things I want to do.
That's
different than $100 million.
Of course. And that is more like in my world of like...
Yeah.
Like, oh, you hit certain milestones. It's like, oh, that's not as much as I used to think it was. And maybe that's partially because of inflation and partially because you're an adult and you sort of learn that. I will say, so I have an acquaintance who is very wealthy and she married wealthy, right? Mm-hmm. So she's wealthy enough that when she travels on a plane, she gets the option where you get the whole room to yourself on the plane, which I didn't know existed.
I mean, that's not on most planes.
No, it's only on the super expensive, really nice, like cross, you know, intercontinental stuff. But she gets that.
But it's like a step below private jet.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think it's a step below private jet. But she has her own room. She essentially has a hotel room when she flies.
I mean, it can't be every time. I'm skeptical of this because I've gone on many luxury, like, international jet flights, either from cross-country in the U.S. or internationally, where I'm not sitting in that section, but I go past everything in the plane, and there's no private rooms.
Right. You're not going on the nice, good planes, though. You're on the poor people planes.
No, I am not. Like, they're all the same plane. So you're saying these planes don't have coach?
No, I'm sure they have coach, but I'm saying they have, like, they're planes that have, like, upstairs.
You know, the 747s. I've been on 747s.
Have you been
upstairs?
Yes. Have you really, though?
Yes, I have.
You snuck up there for a second?
No, I've been upstairs.
Did you look at the rooms?
There are no rooms.
There is a whole secret society where people have rooms on their plane.
I am very skeptical of this story. Maybe it happened once on like a prototype plane.
This is a real thing.
This is fucking bullshit.
No, everyone does this.
Everyone does this.
Look, I'm sure... By now, there are people who are writing into us on Twitter and Discord telling us if this is true or not, right? So don't worry.
It depends on how you define room, because I know, like, on some of the newer 777s and 747s, there's, like, the first class and business class have compartments where you lie down, and they're kind of walled off.
No, that's not what I'm talking about. Okay. I'm talking about you have, like, a whole deal.
Like, you have a sink?
I think you may have a shower.
Okay.
Stuff like that. I don't know about the shower. I'm making that up.
I don't think this is...
It's a whole hotel room It's like a Motel 6 up in there.
This woman may have flown on, like, some... Like, Air Jordan's, like, premier jet one time, and they have that, and...
Why would it be one time? Why couldn't she fly every time on that? I don't understand. Why have you decided she only flies once on there?
Okay, so she's going to plan her schedule around when this jet is flying only.
I mean... Maybe she only flies like the longer, you know, like most people, not most, a bunch of people who have some level of wealth and they will only fly internationally if they can fly like business class or better, right? Or some first class or better, and some the room or better, the hotel room.
I am going to say the room does not exist on very many planes.
I'm going to be really upset if this doesn't exist. I got to tell you, because I've been told this for a long time by a good friend of mine. She's a mutual acquaintance, but he knows her a lot better than I do. And he was telling me that this is how she does it. And I believed him the whole time.
Either it's a game of telephone where he's misinterpreting the normal lie-down first-class situation that's on all of the international liners.
Maybe.
Because I think that is a thing. Like, yeah, and I think even maybe on some of the like Middle Eastern airlines that value luxury a little bit more, maybe they have the wall goes all the way to the ceiling instead of like on United and shit. It's like the wall goes like, you know, 5 feet high, so your people can't like look at you, but it doesn't go to the ceiling. So maybe that's the difference, but it's the same amount of space, and you're just in a lie down.
I got the impression it was really not like that, and that it was an actual four walls.
So how do you think there's room for a room where other people walk past it and stuff?
If you pay enough money, there's room for everything.
No, but physically on the plane.
I think what you're doing is you're trying to just fight for your own status here.
I'm just not gonna fucking just accept that you say this thing that nobody's ever fucking heard of before. Like it's a fact.
I had never heard of it before or since. Except from this one source, I will acknowledge. But that tells
Have you ever seen it? You used to fly to London like a lot.
Yeah, I did. I flew to London all the time. But I was flying on British Airways. I mean,
British Airways. Yeah, they don't have first class. They don't have nice things.
No, they did. It's a secret society. Of course, you don't hear about it. It's like the Pentaveris.
But the plane is a finite amount of space, and you walk through the whole thing for the most part.
No, when there's an upstairs, who goes upstairs? No one. You're not allowed up there.
I've been upstairs.
Yeah, I know. You like fucking Oliver Twisted your way up there. But they found you at some point and sent you and your coal-laden hands back down to coach.
Yeah, I don't think you know what you're talking about here.
Well, I guess we'll find out. Well, by now, it's all over the Discord. It's all over Twitter. So we'll be able to look and see. You know what I mean? By the time this comes out and people are hearing us say these words, someone's probably already responded and...
So
by the way, we're not going to Google this. I'm letting the world come to the world is
no
coming to me.
No chance we're Googling this. There's no chance we're Googling this. There's a black box on this.
I never even thought to challenge the idea of the room in the sky. I will admit. I was like, wow, that's the level of rich I wasn't really aware existed. That's like different. How about, I didn't even know those things were real. That's crazy. You know, and that's, I just believed it because I'm the kind of guy who believes in the tooth fairy.
I think there is a game of telephone happening here. Well, maybe you heard room in the sky. And what they actually meant by room in the sky was it's a lie down bed where the floor to ceiling door thing.
My friend,
you think you can get up and walk around.
My friend thinks you can get up and walk around. The one who told me about it. For sure. He thinks that.
Okay.
So I don't know. I don't know if it's my friend, Ron. I don't know who you know. That's what I'm saying. I don't know if it's what she was reporting to him, but so maybe it's the game of telephone and that's what he's reporting to me. But that is absolutely what he thinks is going on. He thinks it's a hotel room in the sky. He's passed it on to me. I have been brought into this cult of there's a secret society of rich people running the world from their hotel rooms in the air.
So when you're envisioning this room in the sky, are you what amenities are in here?
Oh, I'll tell you
like,
exactly.
What's the size?
No.
What's the size and what's in there?
Okay, first of all, the size is not that big, right? Like I said, it's like a Motel 6. So it's like
a Motel 6? wider than the plane?
Yeah, no, not the whole thing, just the room, the one room.
Yeah, I know, but the room in the Motel 6 is probably like...
It's long. Okay, it's not wide. It's long. No, I figure it's something like, you know, I'm just making these numbers up right now. Maybe like 5 by 10 or something like that. That's 50 square feet.
That's not much of a room, but okay.
for a plane, that's pretty good. Come on.
You can't have like a couch and a bed in there. I'll tell you that much.
You can have a bed though.
Yeah.
You could probably have a bed that's also a couch. You know, one thing, which is both.
Sure.
That's, so you have that. You obviously have a really nice bathrobe. You know what you got? You got all the soaps that you can steal and all the little.
Can you get up and walk around
shampoos
in here?
A little bit. It's like being in prison, right? They also take you out to the rich people's yard where you can actually do an hour all of right, exercise, so, of course.
So in this world, this exists. Clearly, this would cost more than normal first class.
Oh, yeah.
So,
yeah.
And like, international first class is very expensive, right?
It's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's like tens of thousands of dollars usually.
Tens of thousands? You know, that doesn't sound
It's like
right.
8,000 plus, and it can get much higher.
When I flew to England...
In 2001.
Yeah. International first class from New York to England was $3,000, I think.
Yeah, but that's like the shortest international flight you can take over the ocean.
Yeah, and when I flew to Australia in 2016, I'm going to say, maybe it was 2014, business class was $3,000, I think.
Okay, business class and first class.
I know. Very different. I'm just trying to give us context here. So you're saying you think first class would be more than three times...
I would say that was? If we looked up right now...
Which we're not going to do.
No,
that's for the internet to come to us with.
No, that's just about the room in the sky.
Yeah.
We could look up first class prices on British Airways or United
we're
or something.
We're not doing that.
To get from LA to London.
Yeah.
Like, what do you think it would be?
I would have guessed it would be like maybe
$6,000. I think
it's... You said tens of thousands. So that's like at least 20K, you think?
I'm going to United.com
There's
right
no
now.
There's no way it's 20K. Fucking K to fly. From
I don't think
LA.
It's 20K. I don't think it's 20K, so, but I think.
Okay.
I think it can be over 10,000 is what I was really meaning to
you
say.
You know, flight stuff has gone crazy with the prices lately, as everything. Maybe it could have possibly touched 10,000. You think, but you when you said tens of thousands, you're implying like not 10,000, but more. I mean,
that was kind of a misspeaking when I said tens of thousands. That, to be fair.
Okay.
Let's see.
You just got to call him out on these things, otherwise he'll never back down.
All right, so we're talking round trip prices, right?
Of course.
All right, cool.
I mean, is this going to take a long time?
It might take a little bit.
I can't do it.
We can do it. So, okay, but under this circumstance, let's say right now, let's just use 6,000 as a stand-in, although I don't believe it to be correct.
Okay.
How much would the room in the sky cost if first class was 6,000?
25, 30.
Okay.
I'm just making that up.
So why not just get a private jet at that
How much
point?
Does a private jet cost?
I don't know.
See? So what the fuck? If a private jet costs 80, then the room in the sky is a lot cheaper.
I don't think it's that much.
I don't know. I had heard that the room in the sky from back in the day was 20. But maybe this was all just... It can't be a prank.
It can't be a prank?
It can't be a prank on me. Because no one does that. No one prank me. They know that's a bad move.
Why would they not want to prank you?
Because if you prank me, I fucking prank back so hard, I ruin your life. I prank you by like, oh, I made it look like you were cheating and now your wife left you forever. Ha ha, you got pranked. You know, that's my move. So you don't want to prank me. Like you make me think like you pulled your finger off for a second and I'm like, I'll have your children hate you forever.
You have...
Yeah, I'm in the revenge prank business, and I come hard. I go hard is what I mean to say. Yeah.
You did it. You did it, man.
Damn it. I feel like this may not... This may be played at my trial in the future, you know what I mean? And they'll be like, is he of his right mind, and is he... Can we trust anything this guy either thinks or says based on... They're just going to play this. But that's okay. So are you still looking for the first class price? You still can't.
I'll tell you this much.
Okay.
This is with a layover in Denver. So from LAX to Heathrow on United, first class is not available. Business class is $13,000.
What the hell? That's insane. You're looking at like, did you find like the most expensive one?
No, I just went to United and typed in like dates that are far enough away and everything.
Okay, but like we could probably do a little better than
all
that.
Of the business class. Yeah. Well, I found one that was $9,300 for business class.
Ha!
But everything else is...
I actually looked at flying business class from here, which is the west coast of the United States, to New Zealand, like recently, and it was $7,000, just FYI. So that's business class, not first class, but still, just to give some more context.
All right. Well, how much do you think first class is if business class is $13,000 sometimes?
Well, on that flight, probably, I don't know, 18?
I think it's probably more.
Well, you don't know, do you?
I don't.
Because we got to shut this down. This is ridiculous. We're just Googling prices on United. I mean,
it's pretty interesting stuff to me. Anyway, point being, Monte Carlo, they don't care about this stuff.
Right. In Monte Carlo, they build planes which have Motel 6s on them just because they can. Right? Because things are that crazy. The rich are that wealthy. And they're upset about it. Because they're like,
I'm too rich.
I still don't have as much money as Bill Perkins, and I'm angry.
I mean, I think a lot of them have more money than Bill Perkins. Of course they
do. No, of course they do.
By like a lot.
Bill Perkins just paid, I think, $15 million for a piece of art at a Christie's auction that had been thought to go for $150,000. He paid $15 million. He got into a bidding war with one other guy, and they just kept going. And the other guy said, I'm not going to stop. And Bill Perkins said, fine with me. I don't care. And they just kept going and going, and finally it stopped at 15.
So the other guy lied then.
I mean, eventually you have to stop.
He said, I'm not going to stop, though.
Yeah. But I think at 3 million, he said he wasn't going to stop, and he pushed Bill Perkins to 15. So.
All right. One final thing on the airline.
Oh, okay.
To your point, I found first class on United from LA to JFK. So cross country, not international.
Yeah. I mean, that's.
But it's more in the $4,000 range for first class for that.
That I believe. First class, man.
It's really expensive.
Is it that much better than business class?
I don't know.
I think I've only ever flown business class. I mean, on domestic flights, a lot of times business class and first class is the same thing.
Like they don't have business class.
Or they don't have first class, but whatever.
I think they either...
It doesn't matter. It's semantics.
It is semantics, but I want to get it right because... Okay. And I'm pretty sure that if you only have two classes, you call it first and coach.
Oh, okay. I don't really know.
But I don't really know either.
I mean, the websites where, you know, like Expedia or whatever, if you put in business or first and it's a domestic flight, it just gives you whatever the thing is. So it doesn't matter. Anyway, my God, we've got to stop talking about this. The travel show with Grant and Jonathan.
Monte Carlo, man, it brings it out.
It's true.
They got the $20 bananas. They got the Bugattis everywhere.
I know. You're bringing out the Joe Stapleton greatest hits here.
That's his favorite place for them to play because he gets to make his things are expensive in Monte Carlo joke.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And now you get to make those jokes too.
Yeah. In a book that I'm sure many of you have read, the Maria Konnikova book.
The Biggest Bluff?
Yeah, that's what it was. She talks about going to Monte Carlo with Eric Seidel and how there's a town right across the border in France that you can get to just by walking where everything is normal prices. So you could pay $20 for a cup of coffee in Monte Carlo or walk, you know, a mile and pay $3 for the cup of coffee, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But I guess a lot of it, like you said, is a status thing. Like, I want to be in Monte Carlo as I buy my Starbucks and pay more for it.
I mean, also, you know, like, you may not feel like you always want to walk 20 minutes just to get a $3
cup
to save $17. By the way, it's 20 minutes each way.
Yeah.
You know, like, I could see where you're like, $17 or, you know,
no,
40 minutes of walking.
It's true. But if you get to bigger stuff like, you know, going to a nice restaurant, then it might make a big difference.
Also, you don't have to walk. You could Uber there and back probably and save money anyway. Maybe not, actually. I don't really know. Anyway, let's talk about this hand.
All right. Let's talk about these rich guys. Sam Greenwood, Mustafa Kanat, and this other guy.
What's the other guy's name?
Fabian Mott.
Mott! It's like the end of Star Trek 2, The Search for Spock.
Yeah,
The Wrath of Khan. Excuse me.
I mean, he says Khan. How do you call it The Search for Spock?
Mott! Like that. And then, of course, also Star Trek 2 Into Darkness, which is just called Star Trek Into Darkness, where they say Mott again, but the other character does it. This time Spock does it.
They always say Mott. Whoever it is, they say Mott.
Someone dies and then they always come back.
Yep.
And Khan always kills them, but they always come back. So no one cares.
Benny Cumberbatch.
That's right.
Yeah.
In his best role since Doctor Strange.
Sure.
Okay, let's talk about these guys. Let's do it.
All right. Sam Greenwood is good. Mustafa Kanat is good. What else is there to say about these guys?
They're both really good. They're both very successful. We know this.
They both play high rollers. They are among the elite players.
Yep. And then there's Fabian Mott, who I have his hand in front of me. He's mostly playing 1K type buy-in, sometimes a 2, the occasional 10, which I don't know if he's, you know, satelliting in, but also a $300 buy-in. So he's in that general area. He's playing a lot. He's cashing a lot, so I assume he's playing a lot. As well.
Either that or he has a super high cash rate.
Seems unlikely.
Yeah.
Just because no one does. Also, there's another reason, which we'll get to.
Yeah. Anyway, this hand was suggested by Chris Jones.
Hey, say it. Say the thing.
Nah, it's too... Okay. It's too much.
Can't do that.
Can't do it, Chris Jones. Not every time.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, get over yourself, Chris Jones.
Yeah, really.
I mean, it's embarrassing at this point. Anyway, on Discord, Chris Jones did a great job suggesting this hand and many others that we'll probably do. Suggest hands on Discord. There's a link in the description. You can also do it on Twitter. We are the Poker Guys on Twitter.
Forever.
Forever until Twitter gets shut down, you know, which could happen at any point. Who knows?
Wow.
Yeah.
Everything's political, Grant.
Oh, yeah. That was political now. Everything's political, according to you. Like, oh, look, that bug is green. Oh, wow. You're in the bug is green side of things, huh?
You just said Twitter's going to get shut down. That's not political at all.
I mean, it wasn't political. I know. It seems to be in turmoil at this point. That's all I'm saying. Is that political?
Maybe a little. I don't know.
It seems like an objective observation.
How is it in turmoil? There's someone's buying it? Why is that turmoil?
I mean, it seems to have unearthed some problems within Twitter as well. It doesn't matter. We're not going to get into that.
Don't want to walk down that political path.
So political of anyway. You to say. Anyway, that's where you can suggest things. Let's get to this one.
Okay.
159 get paid in this thing. There's 252 remaining out of the 1,073 entries.
Yeah, 700 and some odd.
Unique players.
That's right, because it was a re-entry event.
So it's probably not going to be that long until the money, not like a day, but it's, you know, hours away, I would say, at this point.
Yeah, something like that. Hours.
So, you know, that might be on your mind a little bit. Like, tournament life is a little bit more valuable now than it used to be, and certainly more valuable than after the bubble bursts, but we're not really in bubble mode yet.
I don't think we should be worried too much about that. Yep. I mean, you don't want to just call it off super light just because, but there's still real opportunities to, like, you know, win some big-ass pots. Yo.
Right. And crucially, at this stage of tournaments like this, and this is something that I've observed in the bigger tournaments that I've played at the World Series and other stuff like that, is like around this point when there's, you know, say, so there's like 10% of the field between you and the bubble, mm-hmm. right? That's when a lot of players will start to act bubbly.
Exactly.
And it's a time that you can really start taking advantage even well before the bubble is really approaching.
I know. I actually remember playing in a tournament. This is like 4 years ago now, 5 years ago. And it wasn't, it wasn't a big tournament. That's not trying to be a dick here. It was like a $300 buy-in or something like that. And I was playing against a kid who was on my left, and we were like in a similar stage of the tournament, right? We were like, it wasn't 100 players because there weren't 1,000 to start with, but it was, you know, 10% still to go. We were a solid like 2 hours away or hour away or something like that, probably from the money bubble. And he was on my left and he was good. And so I was like, oh, as we get closer to this, he's going to start to put a little more pressure on me, all that. And then I noticed just like he wasn't doing that. In fact, he was barely playing any hands at all. And at some point he just unsolicited, like reached over to me and said something about how like the money's coming up and like, and I was like, oh my God, he's like folding now because the money's coming up. This is unbelievable. And he told me, this is amazing.
What a deal.
Yeah. And so.
And he was good.
I mean, I thought he was, but I had to readjust my thoughts on
that. Maybe he just had the right look and he knew how to put the chips in the pot and stuff.
He could also talk about hands in a relatively, you know, smart way and stuff. However, that's only part of being good.
Yeah.
Right? Like, you can do all that, and if you're going to play, you know, significantly suboptimally for a long time, that means you're not as good, right?
Like, yeah.
Period. So, yeah, there was that going on with him. I can picture him right now.
Right, if you can hit every three-pointer in practice but never in the game, then what's the point?
Yep. Or you're only going to take... You can hit all the open threes, but you only take bad shots.
Yeah. Right?
Like, you take covered threes. Like, so?
Yeah.
Cool, you have the skill set, but it don't matter.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. All right, so yeah, that's the stage we're in. I don't think any of these players are going to be scared. Mott, probably just because he's kind of older, gives me the vibe that he's got a lot of money. And we know that Greenwood and Kennett are not going to be fretting over this $5,000 euro bubble. They play much bigger than this.
First place is nearly $1 million, 939,000 euro. But come on, that's so far away that no one can really seriously be thinking too much about that. No one should be ever, that should not be working their way into anyone's mind here, except to be playing for that and as opposed to playing for the min cash.
Which I'm sure Greenwood and Kennett are.
Of course.
Right, we're at 1K, 2K. Greenwood's under the gun with 108K. So he's got 54 bigs.
Okay.
He's going to open to 4,500 with ace of hearts, queen of clubs.
Sure.
Folds to Fabian Mott, who has the same stack in the small blind.
Cool.
With king 10 of hearts. What is your approach here? I think this is actually already kind of an interesting spot.
I agree. He opened under the gun, right?
Yeah, and it's Sam fucking Greenwood.
I'm just folding.
Because it's Sam Greenwood or because he's under the gun?
More because he's under the gun. Then because it's Sam Greenwood, but it's a little bit of both. But mostly just under the gun opens. We have 50 some odd blinds. I'm just folding king 10 of hearts in the small blind, the worst possible position. I'm just folding that.
What if it was a Mizrahi?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. If it's Michael Mizrachi, I'd probably have to call. Assuming he's opening the percentage, the frequencies I mean, that I'm assuming.
If he's still opening Jack 8 off under the gun, which he probably
then
is.
Then we should just call.
Yeah.
But assuming Sam Greenwood is playing anything reasonable at all from his under the gun, which I would guess he is with Mustafa in the big blind especially.
Right.
Like, I don't know why we would call this hand. Like, sure, we can make a hand with it, but you can do it with any two cards. Like, I don't want to play this hand out of position.
Let me ask it a different way.
Yeah.
You're in that $300 tournament instead. You're 54 blinds effective. You're clearly the best player at the table.
Yeah.
Change your opinion out of the small blind?
Sam Greenwood's not the guy opening.
No, it's just some one of those players. You don't know anything about them, but they're in that field.
I mostly fold.
Yeah?
I'm mostly folding. They're still under the gun. I'm still in the small blind. It's just King 10. It's not even like an ace high flush draw potentially. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, it's hard to get paid when you make your flush, and that when they make the flush also, they generally have a better flush than me. And like, you know, like, I just don't need to be involved there.
Is this the board?
If I'm on the button, I might call much more. I'm probably calling on the button.
I think
a
you're
lot.
Definitely calling on the button.
Of course, in the big blind, I'm calling. This is the worst possible position. I think I'm just folding.
Is this the borderline hand then? Because King Jack suited
feels really hard to fold.
Yeah.
Yeah. King 9 suited is an easy fold, of course. So yeah, I guess it is. I guess it's the borderline right there.
So it's not absurd to call.
Nope.
But maybe if it's Sam Greenwood and your Fabian Mott, it is.
Yeah. Again, like if it's Sam Greenwood, if he's if I can be on the button instead, I'd be much more interested in calling for sure. I get so much more value by calling on the button than on from the small blind, right?
Yep.
And you know, overall my expected value is so much higher.
Yep. Do you think it's worth considering a 3-bet?
I mean, no. He opened under the gun.
Yeah.
What are we doing?
Right.
Like also a 3-bet wins us chips sometimes, but like it feels like we're almost effectively, we could just take any king and do this almost. Not exactly the same, of course. It tends a slight blocker, but come on. I don't know why we would. I think we should just fold. What do you think?
I'm more okay with playing out of the small blind than you are
as
a non-aggressor. So I'm okay with calling here at 54 blinds effective. If Kennett had a shove stack, which he sort of does actually, he's got 54K in the big blind.
54? Oh, 54K, yeah.
He could definitely shove. He's got
how many blinds is that?
26.
Yeah, he could shove.
27. Yeah.
I mean, it's unlikely he's going to do that very often against a Greenwood under the gun open, unless Greenwood's opening constantly.
Right. And I guess like that's fine. We lose two blinds in that case. It's not a huge deal.
That is true. Also, it's we're not putting in that much. Like it's 3,500. We're putting in two blinds basically to see a flop. Still, I just feel like this is a trouble hand. King 10, even suited. We're rarely going to make the flush or the straight, and everything else is potentially problematic down the road. You know, I guess we could make top two and feel really good about it.
I mean, against Greenwood's range, King Jack is a similarly troubled hand.
It is.
But you wouldn't fold that one.
I would never fold King Queen, and I think I wouldn't fold King Jack suited either.
Yeah.
I think I would just probably feel obligated. If we were right on the money bubble, I'd fold King Jack suited for sure in the small blind. But no, right here, I don't think I would.
Yeah.
You know, just be like, this hand's just a little too good.
I think it's like I would just do a mental coin flip. I could call or I could fold here. It's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, I'm more okay with playing as the non-aggressor out of the small blind than you are, which I don't know if that's correct. I know depending on the era of poker, there's been a lot of different theory on that. And
sure.
Who knows if prevailing theory is, air quotes, correct. You know,
I think it's okay to call from the small blind from later opens besides under the gun. Of course, we might be through betting more too. But basically just playing this hand versus not.
Yeah.
Like. Is something we can do against some of the field here, but like doing it against the early position guys just feels like a losing money play. Maybe it isn't, but it feels like it.
Well, I think also if I am Mott, I am going to try to play as few pots against Greenwood as possible.
Mm.
So that's part of that leans me towards a fold.
And especially if you're going to play, wouldn't you want to be in position as much as possible?
Right, and you're going to be out of position to him and Kennett, by the way, who's almost always going to at least call.
He's coming along so much more when we call. He's coming along a lot anyway, but he's coming on way more.
It's like potentially the two best players left in the 250 player field directly on our left. That's pretty unlucky, but we don't have to play against them in the small blind with a marginal hand.
Exactly. And now we get to be out of position to both of them with this marginal hand. Why do that?
What a bad draw for Mott, by the way.
Yeah.
You got Kennett on your left and Greenwood on his left. It's not like we're playing a 50K high roller here. We're just in a 5K.
That is
super
really
unlucky.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah. Anyway, Mott does call with King 10 of hearts. Kennett's in the big blind with ace 4 of clubs.
What a deal.
I mean, he calls. A lot of players will be tempted to squeeze here. What do you think about that notion?
I think it's okay to squeeze here. At the same point, because Greenwood opened under the gun, I would be reluctant to.
Yeah.
Again, unless Greenwood is opening constantly, then absolutely we should attack. Although I'm a little worried about what Mott's calling range is, but he only called two blinds and he's the old guy. I assume it's fine.
Yeah.
Assume we're getting that through most of the time. We still have an ace. We're probably, you know, we're at least 30% when called against Mott, right?
Yeah.
Like always, if not significantly better. I think it's not crazy to squeeze here as long, but I would mostly not do it because of the under the gun nature of the open. If you open in middle position and we have this spot, I think this is something we could squeeze much more of the time.
Mm-hmm. I also would prefer to squeeze ace four off. Ace four of clubs plays a lot better post flop. We have a lot more check raises on the flop that we can generate fold equity with.
That's true. That's true.
So Kennett does call.
Seems
out
fine.
Of his 54K stack.
Yeah.
Pot is now $15,500. But who cares about that? It's nitro betting time, baby.
It's time to nitro bet your way home. All the way in the sky, in your hotel room in the sky.
See, that sounded off the cuff, but that was copy that nitro betting made us use.
Yeah.
And you're actually not allowed to say it as the listener. You're allowed to listen to Jonathan say it, but I mean, you can say it. It's a free world in the sense that we can pretend there aren't any laws and that they're not going to come after you with the lawyers. But you know they're going to come after you with the lawyers if you say it. I don't care if it's you in the bathroom by yourself. They'll know.
They've got listening devices everywhere. You think that phone of yours doesn't have a microphone?
You idiot.
Yeah.
Point being, nitro betting knows everything, including how to make you feel very happy with its great deals and its wonderful website. You know, mm-hmm. It used to be Nitrogen Sports. Now it's Nitro Betting. It's a new website. You have to sign up again. Even if you already signed up for Nitrogen Sports using our link, you got to use the new link that's in the description of this podcast to sign up for Nitro Betting and get all of the great deals that are associated with the poker guy's lifestyle.
It's true. You get the hats, you get the sunglasses, you get the pants.
We're a lifestyle brand. We got rooms in the sky, baby, on planes.
You get the candles, you get the bathrobes, you get the shoes.
You get the monthly tournament.
Get the monthly tournament. And sometimes you get other stuff, too.
Yeah, March Madness brackets, which, by the way, they're turning everything into March Madness over at Nitro Betting. They love the idea of the bracket because who doesn't?
Right.
So they're going to bracketize everything.
I love it.
It's going to be a problem. It's going to be like the way AI accidentally takes over the world where it's like, must turn into bracket.
That is what kills everyone in the end. We know this, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've read that article.
The bracket technology.
Yeah. I need more room for brackets. Must kill all humans to create space for brackets. Yeah.
How many humans must I kill to make the next bracket? I must make a bracket to figure out the answer. Yeah, it's exactly that. So you should endorse this. It's wonderful for you. Nitro betting, it's beautiful. It's wonderful. It's where love blossoms. It's where fear is drowned. It's where poems are born.
Mm.
The birds, they sound a little sweeter. The air smells a little crisper, you know?
Can air smell crisp? Sure it can.
Have you been to Iceland? Yes, it can.
Okay. I've not.
Yeah. Well, do yourself a favor, kid.
Let me hit that slogan one more time. Nitro betting, it's the great hotel room in the sky.
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And nobody would ever dispute that, obviously. That's why they decided to go with that, because it's like, let's make the slogan something that everybody will understand
right away.
And nobody is going to say that's incorrect.
It's like just do it for Nike, but it's their version of that. Yeah.
Yeah.
They spent a lot of money with the ad. The ad wizards.
The focus grouping. They almost created a focus group AI that destroyed the world, but they swept that one under the rug. Luckily, that was a close one, you know?
Yeah.
That was a close one.
Yeah. Originally, the slogan was nitro betting. It's better than paint.
Yeah.
And I was like, they presented it to us and you were there. I was like, who's the ad wizard who came up with this one?
Well, the thing was the AI, this is the problem with AI autonomous systems is like, it was like, my number one goal is to create something unimpeachably true.
Right.
And so the focus groups that the AI was doing, which it then created its own AIs to do focus groups with, were all saying like, oh yes, it is better than paint. And so, like, it's like, oh, this is obviously the winner.
Yeah.
But they had to adjust the dials, you know, a little bit.
Yep. And they did, and they came up with this gem.
Yeah. Think about the hotel room in the sky.
Yep.
Which is simply brilliant. All right. Speaking of simply brilliant, let's talk about these elite players and what they're going to do on the flop.
Okay.
And Fabian Mott.
What is the flop, Grant?
It's 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs, 10 of diamonds. Holy cannolis for Mustafa Kanat and Fabian Mott here. Sam Greenwood sitting there just with the ace queen. It's like, what is the point of life? Which is how Sam Greenwood talks.
Yeah.
Kanat's flopped the nut flush draw. Fabian Mott has flopped the second best trips with King 10. 15,500 in the pot. What should everybody's intention be on this flop?
What a cool question. Okay. If you're Fabian Mott, obviously we would... Okay, I was going to say obviously we would check here. I think we're supposed to check because we're checking to Sam Greenwood's under the gun range, which is probably going to bet his over pairs at least some of the time.
Is he? Against both blinds when the board's paired and there's a ton of... Like, is he going to bet... You wouldn't expect him to bet his bluffs ever on this board because there's too many continues for his opponents, right?
I mean, look, I don't think he's only betting value if he's betting. I'm sure he's betting some bluffs if he's betting at all.
Maybe like King Jack and Queen
King
Jack.
Queen.
Yeah, hands
King
like
Jack.
That.
Maybe things like Ace King with the Ace of Clubs where he's got two back doors and the overs, stuff like that. I don't think he's betting this board very often. But I see a lot of times where I think that, oh, this is a board that they're going to check, and they often bet the flop and check the turn on boards like this. They bet tiny on the flop, and then they check the turn a lot. I agree with you. This seems like not a good board to be betting if I'm Sam Greenwood and under the gun, because it hits both guys so clearly and strongly.
Let me ask you. Yeah. If you're in your $300 tournament, and you're in Sam Greenwood's position,
check.
Two red aces.
Hmm. I'm checking sometimes, I'm betting sometimes, is the truth. It's not a pure strategy, I think. I think I'm checking more than I'm betting because there's two opponents, and they both rate to have a 10 sometimes. But it is a drawy board, and I don't want to just give them free cards either.
Are you calling a check raise?
Depends on the player.
Yeah, I mean, it's really tough because there's combo draws and then just pure flush draws and straight draws that might decide to be like, oh, I have 10s in my range, and the under-the-gun player has a lot fewer, so I'm going to check raise.
I mean, some players, I'm hoping they check raise, right? So that we put a lot of money in and they don't have it a lot.
Yeah.
Other players, I'm probably bet folding. If I'm not sure what I'm doing, I'm more apt to just check. If I'm like, this is going to be really hard to figure out what to do against two opponents specifically, I'm much more apt to check.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is all kind of making me think maybe Mott should consider leading.
Right.
Like if you know Greenwood's going to bet his overpairs, at least that helps a little bit with the check. But then are we going to check raise? Do we expect to get called by the overpairs?
I don't even know if we should check raise.
Yeah.
Like ace-10 ain't folding. Pocket-9s ain't folding. I don't... If we're Mott specifically, is Sam Greenwood calling a check raise from Mott? I've seen that guy. He doesn't look... He looks like the kind of guy who's always going to have it. That doesn't mean he is the kind of guy.
Yeah.
Right. But he sure has the look of it. So... That's a reason to also lead. Although leading is strong, too, if you're Mott, specifically, right? But you could at least lead Queen-Jack sometimes and clubs sometimes also, right? Maybe Mott's like, if you're Sam Greenwood, you're like, does he have ace? Does he have a 9 and he's leading because he's afraid it's going to check through? That wouldn't be insane to lead a 9 either, right? If we think we can lead trip 10s, just to protect our equity.
At least when we get called, when we have trip 10s, we're always ahead, almost always.
No. I don't think always, but we're mostly ahead.
But when we get called, when we lead a 9, we're almost always behind.
Well, the thing is, depending on how we size it, we can be called by King, Queen, King, Jack, Queen, Jack.
A little bit, yeah, but there's also all the overpairs.
Of course there are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Greenwood's under the gun.
Yep.
I don't know. I kind of like leading this hand three ways in this spot.
It's not horrible. You figure it just gets taken down a lot, but that's okay.
Yeah.
It's a wet board, at least.
I would never consider leading King, King, 9. To be clear, if I were Mott, that's a very different scenario.
Oh, okay. Because the kicker situation, right?
Yeah, and it's Greenwood has all of the kings in his range that we have.
Better kings.
Yeah,
too. Like, yeah, only better kings, actually. Really.
And he's not going to be as afraid of the board from his opponent's perspective. Like the 10 hits the blind ranges more than the king.
Meaning he's going to be more apt to bet. On the king, king. Yeah, that's true. Like Mustafa has some kings, but. Like it's really about Mott's range, right? Because Mustafa's got a pretty wide calling range from the big blind anyway. The only kings that are in there, unless Fabian's calling like King Six suited and stuff like that, are like King Jack, King Queen, and maybe King Ten suited, right?
Yeah.
Those are the only ones. I assume he doesn't have things like Ace King in his small blind calling range from under the gun, but maybe I'm wrong. But let's assume he doesn't. Elite is interesting and can't be terrible. It's got to be at least fine.
Yeah. Checking is, I think, also fine.
Yeah.
What about can it?
Right.
Because Mott checks. Should can it consider leading with the flush draw and the ability to represent all of the 10s in the deck?
I kind of think can it should be more apt to lead because Mott checked, which means Mott is going to probably lead some of his 10s sometimes at least, right?
You'd think.
I'd be kind of interested in leading because also I'm not sure what our plan is if we get a bet out of Greenwood. Let's say Greenwood bets... Mott folds. We know that wouldn't happen, but let's say Mott folds. Are we just check raising this right away? We could do that, Now we're playing potentially a really big pot with this hand.
Yeah.
And we're Mustafa Kanit, which means he's less likely to fold his overpairs, right?
Right.
So, but we still would want to check raise because we want to fold that hands like ace, king, ace, queen, ace, jack, and other things. Like, we have the worst ace we can pretty much have here, so... And we could also fold that equity and king, queen, and stuff like that, too, by check raising. So there's some value in it. But now we're playing a big pot, and it may not work.
Yep.
If we lead, okay, we're going to get raised a little bit, but very rarely are we going to get raised.
If we get raised, that means we're usually in pretty bad shape against that hand anyway.
Well, yeah, I mean, Greenwood can have king, jack of clubs, and king, queen of clubs, and queen, jack of clubs.
Yeah, which we're in pretty good shape against.
We're pretty happy there. But, obviously, pocket nines is... Pocket nines might raise right away on this board specifically.
Ace 10 might raise right away.
It might.
We're not in great shape against it, ace 10.
Right. So, but maybe trying to think through the whole hand, if we just check call on the flop as Mustafa, what are we hoping happens on the turn? Let's say we don't get there and Sam bets big, we have to fold.
Yeah.
We do get there, it's going to check through anyway, and it's going to be hard to get value.
Yep.
So we're getting one tiny street on the flop with. When we make the nuts sometimes, like I want to, and with no fold equity, it doesn't seem great. I want to lead. I want to bet. I want to bet more than Mott, even than Mott. I want to bet as
I think
as
I agree.
Mustafa.
I think I agree. But Mustafa does not.
Yeah.
He checks, which is the standard line.
Of course it is.
But it's interesting. And Greenwood, of course, checks with ace queen because of all the reasons.
Yeah. There's nothing doing.
So I do think either Mott or Kanit could have bet and it would have been totally reasonable with their hands.
I agree. And like we said, I like Kanit betting. Mott has less to worry about than Kanit does. Obviously, Kanit can make a monster, but Mott's already there.
Mott's always been there, man. That's the thing you don't know about Fabian Mott, is that he's always been there.
And of course, Mott is out of position to everyone, meaning Kanit gets some data from Mott, which Mott doesn't have when he checks, at least.
All right, the turn is the three of spades.
Yes, nothing changes.
Sam Greenwood is now drawing dead in the hand. 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs, 10 of diamonds, 3 of spades. Mott has king, 10 of hearts. Kanit has ace, 4 of clubs. Greenwood has ace, queen off with the queen of clubs, but that's not really too useful right now. All right. Here's where Fabian Mott maybe should bet, right?
Yeah. I don't know why we wouldn't bet now.
He doesn't bet.
So he's not betting. Oh, I mean, there could be lots of reasons, but I'm just going to say he's not betting because he's afraid if he bets, the hand's just over a lot.
He wants an overcard to come for his opponents to catch up.
He wants to give them a chance to bluff at it also.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't look like anyone has anything, although, of course...
Kanit could easily have something.
Kanit can have a good hand here, right?
Yeah.
So that's the guy you're really trying to get value out of. You wouldn't expect to get any value out of Greenwood when we bet into two players after checks through on this board, right?
To be fair to Mott, if Kanit had a weaker 10, which is the majority of his 10s, obviously, he will bet the turn. So we will... I bet we'll go in if we are cooler in Kanit right now.
By the way, if both us and Kanit check and Greenwood's got jacks,
he'll bet then.
He's going to bet also. So there is value. Of course, those hands are going to get, we're going to get value if we bet from those hands also anyway, right?
Right.
Value goes in either way with those hands on the turn. So it's really just about giving our opponents a chance to bluff. And it's also about us making sure we maximize value when we're out of position against two good players, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know is it better to bet and try and value bet here? We can see there would be some value to be had. Or is it better to check and let these two great players, like, be fancy?
I think I want to bet. And I think part of it is to set my price. I want to charge, like, Kanit's hand is a perfect example. I want to charge that hand an uncomfortable amount at the same point as getting the maximum value out of the overpairs that Greenwood might have and the tens and nines that Kanit might have.
Yeah.
Right? Like, because I think if we can bet pretty big here, it's 15-5 in the pot. We can bet like 9 or 10K.
Oh, yeah. I think we would bet at least.
Kanit's probably going to call with a 9. He's definitely going to call with a 10. And Greenwood's going to call with an overpair if Kanit folds. Right.
Yeah.
And it puts a lot of pressure on Kanit's draws, of which there are many available on this board. And we don't know what we're trying to avoid. So I'd like to start, you know, putting some pressure on those hands.
Greenwood might call with an overpair if Kanit calls.
True.
You know, it's not like an auto fold there.
Right. Yeah. I think betting is my preferred course of action here.
Yeah. I think I agree with you. Also, like, I don't know if Mott is built this way, but like, this is not a bad board for us to take a shot at as a bluff anyway.
Yeah.
Like, this is a pretty good board for us, right?
As long as we have any equity at all, you know, maybe we can mitigate ourselves by not, when we have nothing at all, we can not. But if we have like jack seven, we could take a shot.
Yeah, king queen.
Right.
Like, we can absolutely bet. We should be betting king queen, I think, even. And that's the kind of, king queen's the kind of, we can't really ever have jack seven as Mott.
No,
but we can have king queen.
Yeah.
Especially king queen suited, but maybe even off as Mott. I'm not sure. Like, that's a good way to balance a little bit, right? That's a great hand to bluff with. And then king 10's a hand we can bet.
Yeah. So
damn it.
He checks. I like betting better. What do you think about the 9K, 10K type bet? You like that as a mod?
Oh, yeah. I think we could even bet at like 11.
Yeah.
11, 12, whatever, something like that. I think we should size it up here.
Well, he doesn't. He checks.
Okay.
Now it's on Mustafa.
Yeah.
Who still has the nut flush draw. You think you should bet?
Yes. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
If you're Mustafa, you think, like, I'm going to bet and the hand's going to end, right? Like, right.
Sometimes Greenwood has an overpair and the hand's not going to end then.
Okay, sure. But, like, mostly, both, like, Mott doesn't have anything.
Yeah.
Mott checked again. Greenwood, like, everyone's checking when they have green lights, basically. So here's my green light. I'm not going to check. And I also have, like, reasonable equity here with the nut flush draw.
And I could see how that sounds like, well, maybe Mott didn't mess up by checking because Kanet's going to bet with his flush draws anyway. But he gets to choose the size now, Kanet does. And, like, Mott also doesn't get to generate potentially bigger three-way pots by not being the better in some cases.
Yeah. Also, like, now you're letting Mustafa draw essentially with fold equity instead of he's got to pay to get there. It's a different, even though the chips may go in, there's a different, like, the sequence matters here, right? There's no fold equity. If you make it 11,000, if Kanet folds the ace X of clubs, which I don't think he's going to do, ace four of clubs here. But even if he does, like, that's not a terrible outcome.
No.
So we lose all that. So we're essentially letting him free roll the shot.
Right. And he gets to choose his size, which is 6,500. We could have bet a lot bigger than that as Mutt.
Yeah, we would have.
Do you think Kanet should have bet bigger?
I don't think he needs to.
Yeah.
Right? Like, everyone's just going to fold most of the time.
Yeah. And at this point, he's repping, you know, a 9 or a 10. You could easily have either.
He could have a 9 or a 10. For sure, he could have a pocket pair, like, although he doesn't have very many of those, but he could have, like, pocket 7s in bet as well.
He's probably shoving those pre-flop. Maybe not when Greenwood's under the gun. Maybe not when Greenwood's under the gun. You're right.
So, yeah, there's just, I don't know. I don't, like, Mott needs to bet more because he's got two guys, and we don't know what's up with Kanet, really. But Kanet feels like no one has anything, mostly. And he can size up on the river if he wants, if Greenwood calls with an overpair.
Yep.
If he wants to. He may give up. I don't know.
Hey, speaking of Greenwood, he does call. What do you think about that? He's got ace queen off on this board and Mott's behind him.
That is very surprising to me.
Yeah.
He does not believe Mustafa at all.
I mean, Mustafa is a live wire.
Jeez.
But, I mean, having a queen is not great here. We block some of Mustafa's most obvious bluffs.
Yeah, we also have the queen of clubs, which is sort of a horrible card to have.
Yeah.
Okay, Mott being behind us doesn't feel like that big a deal because we assume Mott's folding, like always, right? So we
know that for sure.
Of course not, but it's very reasonable to think Mott is not going to overcall here.
In a game of thin margins, we should think of that as a factor in the hand, though.
I mean, what's the best hand we would assume as Greenwood Mott has here?
It's really hard to say. I don't know.
It is. It is pocket eights.
Well, it looks like he could have a lot of things.
Turns out he can have very strong hands too, but I think it's reasonable to think, like, well, if I was going to check back this flop if we were heads up and I was going to call this turn if we were heads up, I can call here. I think that's not crazy.
Okay,
we're getting a pretty good price too.
All right, even if it were heads up, should you call with this hand?
I think it's fine to call with this hand once. It's not great.
The
queen of clubs is so bad.
Yeah.
It just feels like you're giving it away to Mustafa, though, right? Maybe we wouldn't have checked the flop so often if it were heads up, though.
Maybe.
Maybe he thinks, like, okay, normally I would have bet the flop and Mustafa's just going to fold a lot, and I don't. But now I've opened the door and Mott doesn't have anything. So it's like I've set up this weird bluff-catching situation against Mustafa. Of course, one of the problems is Mustafa's got the heart to bluff the river.
Yes, he does.
And we can't call again. I guess we can. We're Sam Greenwood. Of course we can. It's a $5,500 tournament. We can.
Maybe.
But geez, that is an ambitious plan when we just don't have to do any of it, right?
I mean, if we're using distribution to make this decision, it feels like this hand shouldn't land here because I would expect that Greenwood is checking back the majority of his overpairs in this three-way pot on this board on the flop. So he has all of those combos that he can call with, along with some slow plays.
Yep. I agree with you. And he might even be checking back like the king queens of the world sometimes because it were three ways. And that's a hand he could call with much more reasonably than ace queen here, right? Because he's got the gutter along with.
Yeah, it's just ace high, basically.
Yeah. I feel like Greenwood is just sort of in the blender of, you know, you've been in this situation a lot, right? Where you check, you're the under the gun guy, you're three ways, you check this kind of a flop, and then it goes check the second guy, the big blind bets, and you're just like, I just hate to concede the pot here because I feel like he's just stealing from me. You know? And especially the kind of guys who do steal in those spots, you hate just folding. But you mostly do, right?
Right.
So it is a little strange that Sam didn't.
Yep. Well, here he is. He calls.
In fact, it's more than a little strange. It's very surprising.
He calls, and that's great for Mott.
It's amazing for Mott.
All right, so now is Mott. Should we raise, or should we just call?
Let's ask this question. Okay, what are we hoping to happen if we raise? What kinds of good things can happen?
Mustafa has a weaker 10.
Yes. And then we assume then he's calling.
We avoid the scare card on the river and get max value.
Right. Okay, that is really good. There are scare cards that will come that will kill our action if we don't raise. Mustafa can have a worse 10. Is Mustafa calling with a worse 10 against us? I don't know.
I guess he could make a hero fold.
He might. It looks pretty strong when we do this.
Yeah.
We're not really repping more than what we have, but we're kind of repping about what we have, right?
Yeah. I mean, we could have pocket nines.
Sure. No, we can have, but I'm saying the bottom end of our check raising range probably is something around King
Jack 10-ish, maybe.
Yeah, maybe Jack 10. Maybe not. Yeah. Like, Mustafa can have Queen 10.
Yeah.
It's hard for him to have Ace 10. It's possible, but that's the only hand that's really a problem for us in terms of Mustafa. Yeah. Like, I guess he could have pocket threes too, but like.
Right.
The thing is, we're not all that deep. Mustafa specifically is not all that deep, so we shouldn't be too worried about getting it in with him anyway. Like, if he's like, I'm all in, we're like, I call, whatever. Yeah. I hope I'm not dead here, you know? I hope I don't have to root for a king.
Yeah.
Because Mustafa, of course, can have 10-9 also. Mm-hmm. But whatever. And it doesn't feel like very often at all we're going to get any more value out of Sam Greenwood.
It doesn't feel like we're behind Greenwood ever. That's not something to concern
us. Beating Greenwood, and like, however we play this, how are we going to get more chips out of Greenwood?
Right.
Because if we overcall, how can Greenwood call again with almost anything? I guess if you have aces, he could call again.
Right. I mean, it's kind of impossible, though, for us to get more value out of Greenwood, like you said. Like, let's say Sam Greenwood does have aces.
Yeah.
And we overcall here, and the river is an innocuous card.
Yeah, it's a deuce of hearts.
Are we just going to lead?
No, I was thinking we check, and then if Mustafa were to bet again.
Greenwood's folding when we've already overcalled.
Yeah, now both of us could have a 10, right? Or something strong.
Yeah.
He's going to hate folding aces, but he's probably going to
We shouldn't worry about getting value out of Greenwood.
Okay, so it's only Mustafa, and we're not afraid to get in with Mustafa and be behind because he only has 26 blinds to start the hand anyway, right?
Our hand's too strong to worry about that.
Yep. Okay, so is the best way to get value out of Mustafa to check raise here, or is it to call and give him a chance? I guess we could lead or give him a chance to bluff. Leading, leading seems really bad.
Yeah.
Like, now it's like, I have a 10 in case it wasn't clear. I have a really big hand.
Yeah.
The lead out of nowhere. So we shouldn't do that.
It's really contingent upon what Mustafa's going to do with hands like Jack 10 and 10-8. Like, is he going to fold those hands sometimes if we check raise?
Right.
And beyond that,
I don't know.
Beyond that, what's he going to do with hands like he has? Like, he's probably going to fold them on the turn, but is he going to keep going on the river if, like, two players called him? Is he really going to bluff again on the river with a draw?
I mean, he's got ace four of clubs. Could he really, if we just call, is he really going to do that? It's asking a lot.
You wouldn't expect that.
Yeah. I think it's hard in either direction because I think if Mustafa's sitting there, if Fabian Mott is the guy who he looks like he is, and I don't know if he is, but if he's a tighter, more careful player and he check raises here, I think we probably should fold Jack 10. Jack 10's beating nothing.
Yeah.
Right? Freaking Canet can have 10-9 and all the tens and stuff like that. And this old guy's check raising two of us anyway on the turn. It feels very strong.
This is all really,
I don't know if we can get value.
This is all really an argument further for Mott leading the turn instead of taking this
well
line.
Well said.
It's just a lot easier to get value.
Yep.
So Mott ends up calling. I guess it's kind of the lesser of two evils. Maybe it's the evil of two evils, equal of two evils.
It feels like it may be the equal. Like, I feel like both are bad options.
Yeah.
Neither one is likely to get us more value in the future. We're going to need, what we really need is, maybe this is the way we get the most value out of as Mustafa's trip tens, though. Like, I wouldn't expect him necessarily to bluff a flush draw or a draw again three ways.
Yeah.
But if he's got Jack 10 and we both called, he is going to bet the river if we check to him, right?
Like, yeah. Unless a club comes.
Right, no, of course. Unless a bunch of cards come that are going to scare him off. By the way, which also could cause us to lose the hand. But still, I think if we check raise, we're probably going to lose him because of who we are. If we were someone else, if we were, you know, Tom Dwan, we wouldn't lose him. But Mustafa Canet may fold against us as Mott. So, but Jack 10 will feel obligated to bet the river, I think. I think he's just going to have to.
Let me poke at the embers and see if I can get the fire started again here a little
bit. Okay.
What about the idea of one of two options for the check raise? Either a min raise or an all-in. Do either of those appeal to you? And if not, which one is more appealing than the other?
I don't think I like the all-in, again, because of... I'm doing this mostly based on the color of Mott's hair and the way he looks. To be clear, he's got, like, gray hair. He's sort of what... He looks like a comfortable... 60-year-old.
Yeah.
You know, those guys, when they check Raizal in, if they're not idiots, which Mott is not, you know, he's not like a has no idea what's going on
right.
kind of guy, have it like so much. And it feels like now he's trying to shut out the draws. And if I was Mustafa, I would just know that he's not, Mott is unlikely to be doing this with Jack 10 mm-hmm. even, right? He's probably doing it better than Jack 10. So I just feel like we don't get called much. So a min raise feels better. A min raise also strong. Of course, another problem with a min raise is the draws may stick around. Now, the board's paired. Maybe they just fold.
Yeah.
Maybe they just throw it away because they don't want to deal. I don't know that either one does a lot of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, probably not. I just wanted to poke at
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Anyway, he calls.
Okay.
Pot's 35K.
Okay.
The river is the Jack of Spades. So that's not a club, but it is a connected card. Now we have 10 of clubs, 9 of clubs, 10 of diamonds, 3 of spades, Jack of Spades. So that could have made a full house for any of the players.
Sam less so, but actually any of the players.
Jack's full.
Yep. Jack's full, actually. Yeah. You're right.
So as Mott, we can't lead now, right? It's just not doable.
I mean, we can lead fold. We can bet
right,
fold.
But is that what's the best way to get value? I don't know.
I mean, it feels like if Mustafa's got a good hand, he's going to bet it anyway. If Mustafa has a 10, he'll probably bet again, right? Because we don't. It doesn't look like the other two players have 10s that often right now.
Mott did overcall.
Yeah, but then he has like, I mean, I guess Mott could have Jack 10 suited specifically. There's how many combos of there? There's only one combo of Jack 10 suited, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So if Sam actually has a 10. There are no combos of Jack 10 suited. Actually, it depends which 10 he has. There's two 10s out there. So if he has the 10 of hearts, then there's no combos of Jack 10 suited.
When you said Sam, I assume you meant Mustafa.
I did. Yeah. Thank you.
People get those names confused a lot.
It's the syllables and the choreography of the letters.
Yes, it's the letter choreography. It's the room in the sky.
Anyway, it just seems really odd. Like if you... If as Mott we suddenly bet out, let's say that Mustafa's got queen 10. That's about as good as it gets for Mustafa.
Should probably consider folding.
Like, right. This is what I'm saying.
We look so strong.
So it looks like Jack 10 just got there, right?
Yeah.
Like, or king queen just got there.
We're over-repping our hand, basically.
Also, Sam is still behind us, and Sam may have jacks.
Yeah.
Like, or a soul-paid monster. I guess he could have nines once in a while.
Yeah.
Queen 10 doesn't look super great, and it's hard for us as Mustafa to have better than Queen 10.
Mm-hmm.
It's possible, of course, but very hard.
We can have like 10-9.
We can have 10-3 suited, but there's not much there for us. So all this to say, I'm not sure. I don't think a lead is going to get us what we want.
No.
I'd be very concerned. And I don't know that Sam Greenwood would call with even kings if we suddenly led.
No, he shouldn't.
Right. Like he can call with full houses, obviously, or put it in with the full houses, but otherwise,
yeah.
Kings does not look good here. Kings is losing.
Right.
All diggity day.
Yeah, Mott's in a position where I think he just has to check. And this now all comes back to leading the turn being the superior play.
Yep.
Like, we could maybe lead this river. We could maybe bet again on the river had we led the turn. We wouldn't have to, especially if called in both spots, although I believe that Greenwood would have folded had Mott led and Canet called.
I'm sure he would have folded.
So then you could probably bet again on the river.
Yeah. No, you bet again on the river, and you're like, please don't raise, please don't raise.
Yeah.
Please don't raise.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
Basically. So, yeah, I think that was the inflection point in the hand that it kind of didn't allow Mott to drive the bus at all and made it hard to get value.
Yep.
He does have the best hand here. So he checks, and I don't think there's anything you can do.
Agreed.
Check.
Agreed.
As Mustafa, should we ever go for it as a bluff? We briefly touched on this when analyzing what Mott should do on the turn, thinking, like, would Mustafa ever bluff twice with the hand that he has?
What are we trying to get to happen when we go for it? Okay, what are we trying to fold out is what I'm asking.
Greenwood has queens plus, and Mott has a different misdraw.
It's going to be really hard for Greenwood to call when we bet again.
Yeah, right? I think we can get Greenwood to fold queens, kings, or aces.
So that's a good start. The next thing we need is to get Mott to fold queen, jack, or king, jack. That's what we'd be targeting.
Yeah, and hope he doesn't have 7-8.
Yep.
Or king, queen.
Or king, queen, or jack, 10.
Yeah.
Or another 10, as it turns out. That feels like kind of a parlay, kind of a big parlay to hit both of those, right?
I think we're going to hit the Greenwood one all the time. When he has no repair, he's definitely folding.
Okay. So that part's good. So then we might think to ourselves, Mott doesn't have that many super strong hands here. He can have king-queen, but or 7-8. But it feels like he doesn't have very many 10s because wouldn't you just bet the 10 on the turn? Like,
you would think that, but what else do you put him on? Because you don't expect an overcall from a 9 unless Mott's just a sticky station.
This is what I'm saying. Like, it's queen, jack, king, jack. That's what you're
right,
targeting.
So you have to get him to fold a jack specifically.
Yes.
Which is combinatorially diminished by the jack hitting versus the straights.
Right. Right, versus the king queens of the world, which feels like he really could have king queen.
Yeah.
But there's 16 combos of king queen, and there's what, 3 times 4? There's 24 combos of queen jack and king jack total.
Yeah.
He can have those.
There's also a 7-8 suited he might be able to have.
We also don't know if he's actually calling king jack on the turn when we bet, and there's a call.
Just fold that.
He might even fold king queen jack, but I doubt it.
I don't think it's folding queen jack.
I don't. For 6,500, feels like too much.
Well, then king queen's probably not there if king jack's not there, at least.
That's a good point. That's good. So either they're both there or neither one's there. Okay.
Yeah.
So that's good. So maybe it's close, but we can get those things to fold. And I'm trying to think, is there anything else we could be targeting here? We don't really think he's ever got a 9, right?
No.
We don't think he's going to overcall a 9 on the turn. So it's really just a jack is the only thing to attack here.
And hope he doesn't have a slow play, which he does.
Well, if he has a slow play, we're going to lose. Yeah, that's okay.
The next factor is, do we have a hand that we should do that with?
Right.
We kind of don't. We block...
Because we have clubs?
We block the club draws.
Yeah.
We don't want to do that.
We don't. We don't block queen jack or king jack, at least. We don't have a king or queen in our hand. That's good. And those are the things actually we're targeting. So it's not really about clubs in this case.
I mean, it would be nice if he had clubs.
Sure, but it'd be nice if he had clubs. That's a good point. It's weird because
it is about clubs. We just were focusing on the other thing. Too.
No, because we're trying to. Oh, you're right. Because I was thinking about what are we trying to get to fold. The thing is, if he's got clubs, we win anyway, no matter what we do, because we have the ace high flush draw.
Sure,
but if he's got queen jack or king jack, we're losing.
But
we
that's
need to
not
get those
that's not
fold.
The conversation we're having. It's about that we block him having flush draws. It's not so it doesn't matter which flush draw he has or we have. We just don't want there to be blocked flush
draws. Isn't that more of a reason to bluff in this case? Because the flush draw we're beating, so blocking the hand we're beating, we don't need to bluff that. But the hand that we're not blocking, which is king jack and queen jack, we do need to bluff.
No, because we just want him. We want to have different hands to bluff with than this, is all I'm saying.
Yeah.
You're missing the thread. You're like falling off of the cliff and not grasping
I understand
thread.
What you're saying. I'm just coming at it from a different angle and asking a different question than we normally ask.
Your angle is shitty.
No. Be open to things instead of being like deep in your dog.
You know that I am.
I don't know anything.
There's lots of evidence on this podcast of me being open to things.
See, when you say things like that, you're just very unlikable.
That's great. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
What I'm saying
anyway,
is, if we're going to have times where we bluff with this line, which is an extremely risky line against two players on this dynamic board where we got called on the turn in both spots.
You want to have just two air?
I want to have a 9. I think the best bluffs are a 9 with nothing else to do with the board.
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
I like that. Because a 9 blocks 10-9 and a blind 9 blocks 9-9.
And it's basically never good against both players.
Right. Okay. That's a great point. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. I think it's kind of interesting to be in a spot, though, where you're like, if he has clubs, I win no matter what. So the things I would want to unblock, if I'm going to bluff, actually are kings and queens, specifically. I think that is an interesting point also. If we're talking about what kind of hands we want to bluff with, that's sort of interesting.
It's good to not have a king or a queen.
Yeah.
I agree with
that. That's all. But I agree with you that a 9 is better than
all. And it's bad to have clubs. It is simply just not.
The problem is it's hard to get here. I guess we could have bet a 9 in the turn.
Yeah, the 9.
This is your point, right? And then suddenly everyone called, and you're like, oh, geez, what is up? And then the jack comes, and you're like, oh, I'm definitely no good now when the jack comes.
Any 9. It doesn't matter which 9. We have all the 9s in the world.
We do. All of them.
Yeah. Maybe we don't do it with 9 king or 9 queen because of the bad blocking that way.
Right. And we're like, we're probably going to have to lose this one.
Yeah. But any other 9, we just turn that into a bluff. Mm-hmm. And that's probably enough bluffs for this line against this strength of line from our opponents.
Here's the other thing we need to ask ourselves. Is Mott going to fold the jack anyway? Like, this whole thing is to get Mott to fold the top pair. Is he? Will he? I don't know. Some of those guys are very tight, and some of them are very sticky, and it depends on who he is.
And that line of thinking, by the way, is flawed. It's like the 2015, 2014 style thinking of putting a guy in an exact hand and trying to play against it. You have to, you know, assume for some percentage of things on the other margins, like sometimes Mott's going to have a 10.
Right.
You know?
Right. It's more, but we were asking sort of like, what are we even targeting if we were to bluff, yeah. right? And then the question is, should we?
Yeah.
So the targeting stuff is correct. That's what we're targeting. But the should we is still important.
Yeah.
Clearly. It seems like this is probably a little too optimistic.
Mm-hmm.
But I can understand you're sitting there, the pot's big, no one's showing any strength except for you, really, right? So it doesn't feel like Mott has a trip tens.
No.
It feels like if we're losing to Mott, he's got a jack. It feels like Sam's got like kings or something like that. Sam can't really call if we bet. Mott with just a jack when we bet into everyone again may find a fold too.
I can see the temptation there.
And it's
a well thought out thing there. Like, and I think Canada is the type of player who tries to find these little crevices, but I think he should probably mitigate combinatorially and not use clubs.
Right, because maybe we can give Mott clubs sometimes. Yeah. So by the way, Sam can have clubs too.
Yeah.
Right, which would be great. Mm-hmm. Even though we think he's folding the overpair, so maybe that doesn't matter. But we get to eliminate jacks a little bit more if we don't have any clubs in our hand, which is nice.
Yeah, but Canet goes for it, and that's just the Canet way, you know?
Yeah.
He bets 21K. I am certain it would work against a Greenwood overpair. Feels very likely.
It feels like it would. And the nice thing is he's giving himself enough of a price that this doesn't have to work very often. It has to work like, 38% of the time for this to be, a plus EV bet.
So not exactly. Good. Only from a chip EV perspective. I mean, I know we're not worried about ICM, but Mustafa Kenneth with 20 blinds is a lot different than Mustafa Kenneth with 10 blinds.
Will he be down to 10 blinds if he bets? Oh, wow. You're right. That's a really big difference for him especially.
Yeah.
That's a really good point.
So it's a big risk.
Right. But he sees that 35K in the middle, and he's like, I can get up to, like, freaking 33 blinds and, like, really be able to rock and roll here, right? You can see the siren call of that.
I can.
The temptation.
And if you had ever seen Mott just be a little too loose, a little too sticky in the past, be like, yeah, he probably does actually overcall a 9 on the turn. That makes this play a lot better automatically.
Yep, I agree. And, I mean, but we still have to believe that he's going to fold the jack. Otherwise, this is just throwing money into the abyss, right?
Yeah. And also, we have to have not seen a lot of evidence of him slow playing.
Right, right. So we need a lot of things.
Because he did overcall the frickin' turn, right? That's strong in itself. We kind of have forgotten that in this, that like Mott's action on the turn of just still being in the hand should signify pretty strong hands.
I mean, it feels like he hit the jack like all day, though, doesn't it? Like, he usually isn't going to have trip tens here. I know he does, but he usually isn't going to. Like, a jack really makes sense for him to have.
It does.
So I get why he's going out, why he's targeting
that. It seems like you are correct that Canada is targeting an overpair from Greenwood and a jack from Mott. That seems correct.
And as long as we know that Mott is capable of folding a jack, then this is probably a good bet, is my thought.
Maybe.
Probably.
I just wish we had a 9 instead.
I think a 9 is better. I agree with you there. I think you made a really good point there and a good case for that.
Yeah. Anyway, he does it. Greenwood folds ace-queen, obviously.
Obviously.
As Mott, would you consider folding here?
No.
No. It's Mustafa Kanit.
We can't raise. There's no value to be had by raising. This is a clear call.
Yep. That's what Mott does.
Good.
Mustafa Kanit does not cash in the tournament because, of course he doesn't.
I mean, he's got 10 blinds now.
Yeah. He's screwed. Greenwood actually doesn't cash in the tournament either.
No, Mott finishes 32nd for $20,000.
So I guess we know who the best player is.
Yep. Mott all day.
Apple juice.
Apple time. Music is my sunlight, and all I need is one mic. And I can show every single MC how it's done right. Every time I come by, I'm bound to leave them tongue-tied. I'm sipping on liquor, a quitter is what I'm not. We got one life, and I took a minor break, but I'm back to claim the throne. And gonna be traveling the globe, we still have time to make it home.